We're reading from the Bhagavad Gita, as it is, from the sixth chapter, entitled Jnana Yoga, text number one. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Anasrita Karma Phalam Karyam Karma Karutiya Sasanyasi cha yogi cha Nani raknir na chakriya. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obliged in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. Purport. In this chapter, the Lord explains that the process of the Eightfold Yoga system is a means to control the mind and the senses. However, this is very difficult for people in general to perform, especially in the age of Kali. Although the Eightfold Yoga system is recommended in this chapter, the Lord emphasizes that the process of Karma Yoga, or acting in Krishna consciousness, is better. Everyone acts in this world to maintain his family and their paraphernalia, but no one is working without some self-interest, some personal gratification, be it concentrated or extended. The criterion of perfection is to act in Krishna consciousness, and not with a view to enjoying the fruits of work. To act in Krishna consciousness is the duty of every living entity, because all are constitutionally parts and parcels of the Supreme. The parts of the body work for the satisfaction of the whole body. The limbs of the body do not act for self-satisfaction, but for the satisfaction of the complete whole. Similarly, the living entity who acts for satisfaction of the Supreme, whole, and not for personal satisfaction, is the perfect sannyasi, the perfect yogi. The sannyasis sometimes artificially think that they have become liberated from all material duties, and therefore they cease to perform Agnihotra yagyas, fire sacrifices. But actually they are self-interested, because their goal is to become one with the impersonal Brahman. Such a desire is greater than any material desire, but it's not without self-interest. Similarly, the mystic yogi who practices the yoga system with half-open eyes, seizing all material activities, desires some satisfaction for his personal self. But a person acting in Krishna consciousness works for the satisfaction of the whole, without self-interest. A Krishna conscious person has no desire for self-satisfaction. His criterion of success is the satisfaction of Krishna. And thus is the perfect sannyasi or perfect yogi. Lord Chaitanya, the highest perfectional symbol of renunciation, prays in this way. Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vajagadisa kamaye mama janmani janmani swere bhavatat bhakti rahitaki tvayi. O almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor to enjoy beautiful women. Nor do I want any number of followers. What I want only is the causeless mercy of your devotional service in my life, birth after birth. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Chakshura Minitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svam Padantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Before I was a devotee, I always felt that people were getting too much entangled in their house, you know, and then like decorating the place and expanding on the place and just a little decoration here and a little thing there. And, you know, it was just a bit much for me. So I decided that I wasn't going to go for this. And therefore, the mood was, I don't want a house. I'm not going to have a house. And I kind of maintained that mood. And I went to India, and also the other people that I was involved with, we lived like that, very simple, simplifying life. And then I joined ISKCON. And I thought, well, now it's going to get real, right? Now we're real. But just the opposite happened, right? Totally the opposite. At one point, I was in charge of Srila Prabhupada's Samadhi in Mayapur, the ultimate house. Right? It was at that time, and still is, the biggest building in ISKCON, right? And I was in charge of like finishing that building and making plans for its decoration and all these things, something I hate, right? Something that goes 100% against me, you know, like every gene in my body is against this decorating house, you know, right? But somehow or other, therefore, I realized that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a sense of humor. I figured that out. He must have thought it was a big joke, you know. There I was, you know. And, well, it was a big joke. Big it was. The big Samadhi Mandir, somehow or other, I was in charge of finishing it off. And for years and years, I was struggling. We came from Vrindavan. Vrindavan was the place where we chose to be. Srivas was also there. He also chose to be there. But we got transferred, right? He got it even better than me because he was transferred to Calcutta, which the black hole of the universe. And he had a great time there. I was transferred to Bengal and I couldn't handle the rainy season. It was just too much for me, you know, like the humidity and the heat. And it's just like the air that was so heavy that you could cut slices out of it, right? For 4 months, rain, buckets just pouring down. So many things, right? Snakes. Yes. One time I was in the room and someone called out, "Come outside quick, there is a big black snake outside." I said, "I'm not coming out." you go for a walk. Come back later and tell me when it's gone. Right. So, in Krishna consciousness, there were so many things to accept. So many things we didn't want. So many things we never thought we were going to be involved with in spiritual life. Not at all. And this movement has such a big agenda, right? So many things to do, and then one gets caught up with it. So I thought, well, but once I take sannyas, then it's all over. Right? But it wasn't all over, right? I just came from a farm in Spain. It's not so easy to make a farm project work. Right? It's very difficult. Just as the Harinam was ending, we ended right in front of a bookstore, and I just, you know, and the Harinam didn't want to stop. It was just going on, and I was thinking, enough is enough, you know. So I just walked for a moment into the bookstore, and there was a little book lying about Mao Zedong. And I thought, let me have a look, you know. And I just read a few pages only. Maybe I'll go and buy it on Monday. It was interesting. it was interesting. A little book about Mao Zedong, and it was saying, it was reminding us that at one point Mao Zedong forced all the people, all the young people, to go and work on the farms. Right? They had to work on the farms. Right? So he was sending all these people to the farms, and they didn't want to stay there. And it said they would run away from the farms and then hide in the cities and take up crime, you know. And I was coming just from a farm project where I'm responsible. It's the same thing, you know. I'm trying to bring ISKCON devotees to the farm, you know, and then they run away, you know. And I'm trying to keep them there. I felt just like Mao Zedong. I could really identify with it. Yes. So in this way, we have to do so many things, right? Not he who lights no fire.
He who sits peacefully in the forest and just away from the world and does not interact. No, somehow or other, we see that we become involved, this time for Krishna, working with the material energy. We become involved for Krishna, looking after our Krishna-conscious family. One gives up, the sannyasi gives up family life only to get a bigger family, right? More people to look after, right? When you have an ordinary family, it's pretty straightforward, you know? 3 or 4 kids max, right? Easy. But when you have hundreds, right? What a headache, right? Hundreds to look after. It really is like that. So somehow or other, we are remembering that previously families had 100 children, like Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, all right, 100 sons, right? So considering that, we think, well, then if they did it, then we must also be able to do. In this way, somehow or other, one has to surrender. Now, this line, surrender, we have heard it many, many times, you know, surrender, surrender, surrender. And we have always thought that, like, well, when I first joined, then I thought, I'm going to surrender. I really thought, you know, I'm going to surrender. And it lasted for 3 days, right? I did well. For 3 days, I did really well. The first class I ever heard, I thanked the speaker deep from the full depth of my heart as saying, like, it was so wonderful, you know, to hear all your realizations, right? Later, it was not like that anymore. I couldn't maintain that level of genuine appreciation. First, the devotees looked so saintly, but later many of them looked totally out of it. Right? I don't know how it changed, but somehow or other along the line, it changed like that. So gradually also I realized that I couldn't surrender. Although the sentiment was there, but I didn't have the practice, and therefore I had too many habits that were opposing that surrender, and therefore it just didn't work. I didn't have the refinement in my behavior. I didn't know how to deal with people. Right? I still don't know how to deal with people, but maybe at least I know some things one shouldn't do with people. Right? I still don't know how you should deal with people. I don't think I've really learned that yet. You know, I'm working on it. But I know a few things one should definitely not do with people. That I've learned. Whereas before, I didn't even know that much. You know, it is a fact. Anyway, the things we have done, right? Yeah. It's like when Srivas is here, I start remembering, you know, things. His brother was also a real character, you know. His brother was also a devotee in Vrindavan, right? And his brother used to refuse to get out of his room, and I was the temple commander. So the only way, and he had the door locked, right? The only way I could get his brother to open the door was hold a piece of cake in front of the window, right? Maha cake, you know? So I would save every day a piece of cake for him, right? And then I'd go like, Novyovana, you know? And I'd hold the cake in front of the window. Novyovana, I have cake. then, you know, then he'd get up. Otherwise, he wouldn't even get up from his bed. You know, and then he'd get up, and then the door opened. Okay, I'd give him the cake, but then I was in. You know, so that was it. Right? Then I had him, dragged him down. Once he was down, I got him to work. So this was our pastime. Right? How's he doing these days? They're okay? Yeah, like to see him sometimes. He's in Scotland? Anyway, like that, you know, we go in this movement with our own preconceived ideas, right? With our own habits, our own conditioning, and it's quite a movement because we are all together from all kinds of nationalities and cultural backgrounds, etc.
and all that's mixed, you know, and it's like, it's inconceivable that all that has to fit together. And very, very difficult. And somehow or other, that's all part of Krishna's arrangement. This movement, right, of bhakti yoga is very different from a monastery. Sometimes people think that we live in monasteries, but we don't live in monasteries, right? Monasteries, at least, our idea of a monastery is that it's a very serious place where people are praying, etc. Of course, recently, some devotees visited a monastery, and one of the monks there said, "If we wouldn't believe in God, this place would be a madhouse." So, made me think that maybe the monastery is also not what we think it is. Anyway, this movement is certainly not a monastery. Our temples are not monasteries. Our temples are something else. One of the first services I did in Vrindavan, somehow or other, was help out in the restaurant, and then within no time I was the manager of the restaurant. And the wildest situations I had in that restaurant. For one thing, we always needed cooks for the chapatis, you know. People eat lots of chapatis, and the kitchen was downstairs, a spiral staircase was there going down, right? And the chapati cook was downstairs, so the chapati cook was often sick, and I found him often sleeping somewhere on a bag of flour in a corner. So on one occasion, there were 40 Indians, you know, a group of 14 Indians walk into the restaurant, right? So, you know, I used to call down the number of chapatis, you know, so I used to call down 10 chapatis, 20 chapatis, and chapati cook goes, so I call down 100 chapatis, right? So something must have happened down there, you know. The cook, right, when he heard this 100 chapatis, right, it must have fused something in his head, right? So I was just, again, you know, there were still no chapatis. And the Indian people you have 40 Indian people and they're eating and they want chapatis and they're not shy about it. They were banging on the table, chapatis, chapatis. So I was facing an angry crowd. And meanwhile, the cook wasn't sending up the chapatis, so I called down again, "The chapatis! Where are the chapatis?" And then suddenly, the cook jumped out of the door, and on his finger, he had made with dough of chapati dough, he had made the head of a joker, and he puts it straight under my nose, and he goes like, "No chapatis." I mean, you know, I don't know. I quite didn't know how to take that at that point, because I was under a lot of pressure, right, from 40 Indians who were angry that they didn't have their chapatis. So anyway, my cook quit on me. There were no chapatis that day. So I thought that it was all about the chapatis. I thought that life, the essence of life, was to somehow or other get your chapatis, you know. And as long as you were getting your chapatis together, then, you know, Krishna was happy. And if you didn't get the chapatis, then Krishna was not pleased. I thought, therefore, that's Krishna consciousness in those days. It hinged all on that. But when I lost my chapati cook, then I started to think about it, that there's more to life than just chapatis, right? And is thinking that there's another element. There's not only the element of getting the right thing done for Krishna and being only concerned about the things. There is also another element, the people, right? It's like I just lost someone, you know, like over trying to really do the proper thing for Krishna. I just burned somebody out, right? So I was thinking, so how to deal with this, right? So this is the first time I burned somebody out. Not the last one, I must say. But it brought
it gave me a better idea of what it really meant to surrender in Krishna consciousness. I understood that ultimately our most important service to Krishna is to make devotees for the Lord. It is said that in this age, deity worship is very difficult to perform. It is a fact. People just don't want to do it. Pujaris with socks on the altar, pujaris with sweaters on the altar, right? All with fluffy wool and everything, you know, and it says no wool, right? But, you know, you go talk to those pujaris, right? As soon as you dare to say anything, you know, socks. So much noise. All right. I'm sorry that I even dare to mention it. You want to kill me, right? You want to kill me, you know, take away my socks. It's like, all right. You know, so it can be very difficult to work with people. Very, very difficult. From my temple commander days, you know, there was one French boy, he had just come to the ashram, and I had not even spoken to him yet. And he had a room, and just for 2 days. And suddenly he jumps out of his room, and he says, "You think you are big chief, huh? You think you are big chief, huh? You think you are big chief? You are nothing. Okay? You are nothing. Nothing."
I think, wow.
What did I deserve that for, right? What did I do? And I all felt like, what am I doing in this movement, right? I mean, it's like, it's too much, too wild. There was one person who came to help in the restaurant, and he had worked in Vietnam, right? So he had a history in Nam, you know. Yeah, he had a history in Nam. And one of his specialties was the old-fashioned razor blade. Oh, my God, you know. And it said he used to zip people open from somewhere, the navel to the throat, you know. Zip with the old-fashioned razor blade. So thinking like, so they sent this guy. That's what he used to do. Anyway, they sent this guy to work in the restaurant, and he was like, you know, I mean, is there going to be some action in this place? Man, is there going to be some action in this place? I mean, I don't know what we're going to do here. I mean, what kind of restaurant is this? Is there some action around it? Action, man, action. Look, just like, no, it's very peaceful here, very calm, you know, just relax, you know, relax. Man, come on, man, we got to have something to do. And so... So one day, finally, there was a crowd, and he was in ecstasy, and he came running into the back of the restaurant. He said, "Give me a knife, give me a knife, give me a knife!" Right? And I go, "We have no knives in this restaurant." You know, the guy got on my nerves, right? It's just like, phew, is that like, phew. So he starts saying to me, he says, "Does it happen to you also sometimes? You know, that it's stronger than you." It's like God, you know, like, it's me or him, you know. One of us gotta go, and real quick. So many experiences in this movement, right? So many, far out ones over the years. And if I think about them, then I can see that all along Krishna was all behind, and that Krishna all along had different arrangements to break down my false ego, to kind of bring me to that point of surrender against my will, again and again, surrender. So here I am. And in a more serious sense, where did I go in terms of surrender? I forgot who wrote it, but 2 days ago I read something somebody wrote somewhere. Changed too many places, see too many things, and it's all becoming
mixed, right? So I can't remember a name or a place. But somebody wrote somewhere that after many years, he had been looking at his contemporaries, and he was glad to note that all of them were just the same like he was, right? They were doing their own thing, the thing they used to do, right? Like, they kind of like were doing, they went back to their own nature. So the question that I like to raise is, does anybody ever change in this movement, right? Does anybody actually ever change? Right? Has any of us actually really changed, right? Have we changed? This is the question, right? Gauranga, have you changed? Have you changed? Has Gauranga changed? honestly speaking, Gauranga, I was talking to someone this morning, and we said, Gauranga hasn't changed a bit. We said he's still the same as he was in the 80s. We said, he hasn't changed, right? And he's not the only one. Have I changed? No, I haven't changed either. Not at all. I found that in 95, you know. In 95, I finally came back from India, you know, after all these years, and like, I mean, really came back to the West, right? I'd been for little trips, but I hadn't really come back. In 95 is the year I came back. From 78, right? I was in India. And like, you kind of think, you know, that you've left it all behind, right? And I gave a class here in this temple. And, immediately there was this lady, and she's saying, well, you were saying this and this and this, and I don't agree with that. She goes like, you know, and she says, no, I don't accept that. She goes, I don't accept it. And I realized suddenly that like, this lady was really Dutch. And suddenly I realized that I was also really Dutch, because I'm also like that. I also go, I don't accept that. No way. I'm not going to accept that. I also have it, you know, that same thing, that I don't accept it. And I, after all these years, I thought I wasn't Dutch anymore. And suddenly I realized that I was as Dutch as anything, right? Dutchy Dutch, you know, that's me, right? So what to do? Does any of us really change? I don't think that our nature really changes. I just think that we learn a lot of things about a lot of things. We learn what happens when you speak to people in a certain way. We know what they're going to say back after some time. We know what reactions will come in life. And in that way, we may act in a different way, but our nature doesn't really change. So in Krishna consciousness, one is not trying to suppress one's nature. Of course, we give up some sinful habits that comes with time. And the only way to really give up sinful habits is by understanding that to be free from sin is a better way of life. Once one understands that actually these sinful activities are causing us, causing so much distress to others, to ourselves, and are not pleasing to the Supreme Lord, then we realize no one will ever win with sin, right? Yeah? So then we think like, well, maybe it just doesn't work, these sinful habits. Maybe I should just give them up. So by understanding that they don't work, one can give them up. Otherwise, no way, right? No way. One won't give them up for a while, and then they'll come back. So in this way, with the years in Krishna consciousness, we begin to see that we have not really changed at all.
And then when we begin to realize that we have not changed, then we begin to think that my life has gone by for so many years now, and I still have not changed. What more? What am I going to do now? Right? I'd better do something. I'd better give it a serious try now, before it is too late. And maybe this time I should really try to adopt more Vaishnav behavior. So this is the concept of surrender. It is described how surrender is a gradual process. So some people take it that, well, if surrender is a gradual process, then that means that, you know, well, you surrender as much as you can. If surrender is a gradual process, then they fill in, that must mean that you see how far you can surrender, and when you cannot yet surrender, that is okay. But that is not actually the meaning of surrender being a gradual process. The real meaning of surrender being a gradual process is that we should try to surrender as much as we can in the situation. We should really give it a good try. And then we'll find that it doesn't work. And then we have to try again. So the gradual process is that although we try, that we weren't successful, and that we keep on trying, and then gradually it's going to work. By practice, we're seeing that Raghunath Das Goswami was gradually accepting renunciation, little by little. Little by little, he was becoming more and more renounced, right? Not in one day. He did not take to the renounced order. Poltergeist. He did not take to the renounced order just overnight. But rather, he step by step, he went forward, little by little. In the end, he was the most renounced person, who was eating the rotten rice thrown out of the Jagannath Mandir, washing it under the tap and taking off the rotten core on the outside and eating the inner core that would remain, the hard, little hard bits with salt. Yes, so inconceivable. It is a fact that in the renounced order of life, one cannot waste too much time with eating, sleeping, and defending. Mating is zero, right? Defending, one cannot make too many arrangements. One is supposed to be fearless and rely on Krishna. Sleeping, one is supposed to minimize it. And eating, one is supposed to keep it simple. And it is said one's hands are one's plate and one's belly is the storage. Right? Like that. And not to worry too much about what will be next. So, this simplifying one's life is actually nice. It's actually, after one has practiced, it becomes nice. It becomes a liberation to, renunciation is actually a nice thing. Because life is so complicated. There are so many complications. And just to let it all go and to just live on the strength of purity. One tries to be pure as much as possible and try to please Krishna. And then everything will come, just as the example of Magrari the hunter, who was asked by Narada to stop killing animals. And Magrari said, but how will I live? Narada said, I will maintain you, but first you cut the string of your bow. He said, how can I do that? Break your bow. He said, how can I break my bow? Right? My father gave me this bow. This bow is my only means of survival. Break it. Crack.
and Merari, just of Megrari, just then went to live with his house, with his wife, in a little hut, and many people came and brought so much foodstuff. So Megrari was being maintained, and there was so much, and it was too much. He said, why is Narada sending so much? Sending too much. So we see that also the devotees were maintaining. So if the purity is there, then what is the problem? Right? Somehow or other, we'll always find devotees somewhere who will help us. Krishna will make some arrangement. So in this way, everything is just going on very nicely. There is no doubt. It's nice like this to rely on Krishna. So to free ourselves and not to rely on so many external arrangements, but just to say, okay, I rely on Krishna. This is really nice, and we must come to this. So at the end of the day, this is what we all have to do, and this is what this verse is all about, to come to the point where we just rely on Krishna. Krishna, if we give everything for Krishna, then surely Krishna will reciprocate with us. That is the spirit. Everything, as much as possible, for Krishna. And then it is said, similarly, the living entity who acts for the satisfaction of the Supreme Whole and not for personal satisfaction is the perfect sannyasi, the perfect yogi, Prabhupada says. So this is exactly what we're talking about. Somehow or other, everything for Krishna. Right? And then everything auspicious will come. And if we can live that life, that'd be very nice. Then you don't have to be a sannyasi or anything. Anyway, that's a big thing, of course, everything for Krishna. So let's at least do something for Krishna, right? For most of us, everything for Krishna will probably not work this lifetime. So for most of us, it may be, let's at least do something for Krishna and maintain to do something for Krishna. And whatever will happen, let us always do something for Krishna. Because just doing something for Krishna is very powerful. There's several stories. There's Prabhupada and that lady who used to come every morning to the Radha Dharma temple, an old lady, to bring a pot of water for the deities. And one day she didn't come back. And Prabhupada said she must have gone back to Godhead. Right? She was old because she never failed to bring that water. Right? For that alone, right? There's another story about one man. He was going every day to the church, and he was saying, "Hi God, here's Billy." Right? And every day he would go, "Hi God, here's Billy." And guess what? He'd come the next day, "Hi God, here's Billy." And then at the time of death, it was suddenly, "Hi Billy, here's God." Right? Yeah. That, you got it? Somebody was asleep. Went too quick, huh? Every day go to the church. Hi God, here's Billy. Hi God, here's Billy again. Hi God, here's Billy. Then at the time of death, right? Hi Billy, here's God. Yeah. Yeah. Simple story, but it's got an element of truth in it, right? There's no doubt. If we just do a simple thing for Krishna, steadily, that has so much power. That simple thing can carry us back to Godhead. It's not that you have to be the totally surrendered, totally pure, perfect person who has all the symptoms of a Paramahansa and who doesn't have a trace of impurity in the heart, not a little bit of greed, never a little bit of desire for anything in this world, who spits at the thought of sex life and just like doesn't want to touch any money only for Krishna and doesn't want anything, you know, nothing. He's never interested in this world. Not like that, right? Even if we have attraction for the material world. But if somehow or other we put Krishna first, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, one can go back. If Lord Chaitanya is pleased, one can go back to the spiritual world. It's like that. When Prabhupada was present, the mood in ISKCON was strongly that everyone would go back to Godhead. And then some years after Prabhupada left, then the doubt crept in, you know, and the advertisement came that, like, unless you are 100% pure prema bhakta, if you don't have prema, then you can't come back. And maybe, after many lifetimes, possibly there is a chance that, you know, theoretically speaking, you might go back to Godhead, although most of us will have to stay here a little longer. That kind of thinking came up. Yeah. Prabhupada did say that one must be pure to enter into the spiritual world. Prabhupada did say that most will go to another universe for some additional purification in the pastimes with Krishna. But the point remains that by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, if Lord Chaitanya is pleased, Lord Chaitanya can make any adjustment and take us back to Godhead. So, on the strength of that, we are surrendering and we are leaving our material desires aside. We just will not feed them. We will not entertain them. We will not give them what they want. Like one devotee told me he had a dream, and in that dream there was some punk, you know, there was a real punk, spikes and everything, and must been pins and God knows what else. This punk was speaking to him the whole night. The dream went on the whole night. It was one of those dreams that never end, you know, like, you know how it is. Sometimes you have these dreams, you dream the whole night, and you're exhausted by the morning because it was a workout, right? So the whole night he was arguing with this punk. This punk was just arguing and arguing and arguing. And he couldn't defeat him, right? So many arguments and this, that. And then after a whole night of arguing, finally, at the end, he realized that this punk was his mind. Right? That was it. He realized it was his mind. So, his mind. He realized that it was his mind. Mind, yeah. So this is a fact that we are all having a mind. We are all having, we're all affected by the material energy. None of us have only saintly thoughts in the head, right? None of us are growing wings as yet, you know. We are not angels yet. Nobody has a little halo over his head, right? All of us deep down inside still have some impure desires, etc. But whatever, you know. What is the benefit of trying to fulfill them? What will that bring us? Right? And that is where wisdom comes into the picture. We have seen it again and again. What will it bring us if we pursue such desires? Nothing but misery. So it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It really doesn't work. Therefore, let's renounce. Let's renounce. There's nothing to renounce. If you renounce something that doesn't work, it's not really renunciation, isn't it? You know, it's just throwing away a useless thing. Huh? Doesn't work. Throw it away. So in this way, renunciation comes out of wisdom, right? One understands pursuing material desires doesn't work. Let's give them up. And in this way, one can actually dedicate his life to purity and to trying to serve Krishna. Abhayam saptvasam sudhir. One should be fearless, always depending on Krishna, and one should look for a life of purification. Okay. I'll stop with that. Any questions? Any comments? Philip.
I have a question on this point of surrender. If the spiritual master gives you an instruction and you think you cannot do it, can you disagree with your spiritual master? Can you say no? Can you say no, I cannot do it?
You can just talk to him like a human being. Right? You don't have to immediately say, he says, like, could you do this and this? You don't have to immediately say, no, I'm not going to do it. No. You could just politely, you know, say, like, well, I'd love to do it, but somehow or other, you know, I don't know if I can manage it, you know, please don't mind. I'm quite limited, you know, for these and these reasons. I find it difficult to do things like that. So please let me off the hook. Yeah. Then he may let you off the hook. Right. He's generally spiritual masters are well wishers. You know, generally they're not like, Lord and master of slaves that have to surrender to anything that we want. Any just little, any desire that comes into our head. Why don't you climb the Mount Everest? Yes. And, well, my dear disciple, now let me see. How far can you swim underwater? Yeah. let's think of another nice service for our disciples. Let's see. Free fall from a plane for you. It's great to be a guru. Now, you are an unsubmissive rascal disciple. You heard that. He said, show the example. Disciples, throw him out of the plane. Shh, the rascal. Dare to rebel against the spiritual master. Yeah. So don't know, you know, like, it's not like that exactly. Spiritual master is quite a well-wisher. He's our best friend. He, you know, so he's trying to work it out. He's trying to work out a program that fits for the disciple. He already knows that the disciple is gonna have some difficulties at times. He's aware of that. That is to be expected. That the disciple at times will not be able to surrender. He knows it. He knows it very well. And he's ready for that, for those moments, to somehow or other help his disciple through it as much as possible. Right? Anyway, try again, you know, like try it in another way. You know, I mean, you have to go past this hurdle. I know it's difficult, but what to do?
There's always room for discussion or adjustment.
Definitely. But if the disciple is surrendered, then the spiritual master may demand more. And to such a disciple, he may just say, go to China. Yeah? As Prabhupada did.
I'm just curious, what happened later with this Vietnam devotee? I heard a few stories.
Nah, I don't know. I'm sure he's okay. You know, he's a devotee. He's also a Vaishnava, and I don't mean anything bad. It's just like it's a wild movement, and it takes all kinds. And for many people who went to Vietnam, it did something to them. You know, it kind of like snapped something in them. Right? And what to do? You know. It was tough out there, right? Lots of killing, etc. And you know, it seems to affect people for a long time after that. So I don't know. I don't mean to, in any way, blaspheme that devotee because he's also a devotee. We're all devotees. But at that time, he was a little bit under the moat sometimes, and it was a bit difficult for me to accept that. I wasn't transcendental enough to deal with his moats, that was for sure. Shiva.
You were asking, does anyone change?
Yeah.
Of course, the character may not change, but I have seen people make advancement over the
years. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Right.
So, you do, when we're young, we're a little bit passionate or whatever. Some people do mellow out, really attain some wisdom.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so we change. In one sense, we change a lot, right? In many ways, we change, right? Still, our natures are our natures, in one sense, you know. But we just learn how to deal with them better. We also see that, like I said, you know, we see that certain sinful activities don't make sense. We see that passion doesn't always make sense. We see that patience sometimes is needed, and so many qualities like that we develop. And we begin to develop Vaishnava qualities, actually, right? We do, you know. So in that way, we do change, you know. And in that way, we've changed a lot. And in that way, Guranga. You changed a lot. You still distribute books in the same way as then, and that's it's amazing, you know. He just does it, right? And it works sometimes very well. So what I meant to say with not changing is our natures are our natures, and we must just engage these natures in Krishna's service. So what really changes is that we become more more conscious of pleasing Krishna and the Vaishnavas, and less inclined to offense to offend the Vaishnavas. So I hope you didn't take offense, Gauranga. You took offense a little bit. Please, please forgive me for this, Guranga. Will you forgive me? Okay, off the hook. Now I have to publicly repent also. See, it's not enough to just ask forgiveness. I have to say, well, actually, of course, you know, in 20 years, someone changes quite a bit. He becomes wiser, and not only are we changing because of material experience, we're also changing because Krishna bestows mercy upon us, right? But there's the other side of the coin, and I was speaking about the other side of the coin, right? So now it's balanced. There's the two sides. We see our changing, but other times we just wonder, have I really changed? And then we just think, God, I haven't changed a bit. I'm still the same. Right? Like I was saying, I'm still Dutch, you know. God, after all these years, been away so long, still Dutch. Will I ever stop being Dutch? God, you know. It's not easy being Dutch, you know.
Is it possible for someone that if you keep eating meat, is it possible to get mukti? In normal circumstances, normal.
No, in normal circumstances, no. Because by eating meat, you always will be involved in karma. You'll get the reactions for killing, and that will bind you. You will be killed. You'll have to suffer for all that killing. Right. So, under normal circumstances, one can never be liberated from birth and death as long as one is eating meat. There's no question. As long as we engage in sinful activities, we cannot get liberation.
No possibility at all.
No, unless, you know, there is some special mercy of the Lord, that's an he. But anyway, mukti, liberation, is also not the goal in life. Right? A devotee says, you know, liberation comes to our door, and liberation says, please come. And the devotee says, no, I have no time. I'm doing my service to Krishna. So how can I? That's enough for us. So we don't want liberation either. Yeah.
But for example, people who are Christian or some other, say Christian.
Yes. Yes. I understand.
And they also have some mercy from Jesus Christ. So maybe there's not their karma. God's mercy of Jesus Christ, maybe they can get from that karma.
Maybe. But it's like we said before. It would be possible by some mercy of Krishna, and the mercy of Krishna can come through his devotee. Right? The devotee, he can attract the favor of Krishna, and then Krishna will do it. Right? It's Krishna who finally, it's his guru, Krishna Prasada Pai. The mercy of Krishna comes through to the devotee. So, if Jesus would be able to give special mercy to some of his followers, then his devotion will appeal the Lord to interfere, and just take this meat eater and purify him. So, that may be possible or may not be possible. We cannot see to what extent that can be done. And whether sometimes Prabhupada was saying that the followers of Jesus are going to Brahma Loka. Yeah, he was saying like that. There's some statements that he made. Whatever may be, but generally speaking, one must give up sinful activity. Right? Any of these four sinful activities are very binding. Very binding. So, ordinarily, no liberation. And you can see how much Prabhupada hammered on meat eating with the Christians. Right? So it's not like that he took it lightly, you know, and he didn't want to entertain some lovey-dovey discussions on our mutual spiritual experiences. No, thou shalt not kill. Again and again, he did it, you know, like, in almost being obnoxious sometimes, right? It's like, so I don't know, but maybe I can't also, I don't know the power of Jesus. I cannot see how great he is, what he...
Here, for example, Mother Teresa has died.
Yes.
A person in the street will think, well, she was a great soul. She
yes.
She went to a higher place.
Yeah, we would think so.
But the devotees would say, no, she ate meat, therefore...
No, I don't think so. I think we would say she's gone to the heavenly planet. You know, I think so. But I wouldn't think... I think she'd gone to the heavenly planets or something for all that piety, all that sacrifice. Mm. So it's not just the eating meat, it's in the context of all her activities, and finally one balances out the other, and, you know, I'm sure she got a better destination, but I don't think she got out of the material universe. it said is when Krishna is satisfied, you are satisfied. Right? Not just for a day, but a lasting satisfaction in devotional service. And of course, the spiritual master is the test. He must be satisfied. So, it's not also mystical. Right? It's like the spiritual master will make it clear what he wants, and then you have to do it. And that can be very difficult at times, but also purifying.
You're speaking about giving up sinful life.
some congressional voters, they say that, I'm smoking, but at least I'm not frustrated. And I see so many people in the temple, they're so much frustrated. Therefore, I am actually more advanced.
More advanced in what? In psychology. Not more advanced in Krishna consciousness. No, Krishna consciousness means we adopt principles of purity, and it doesn't mean that we just have to be always peaceful, right? One can be agitated, frustrated, disturbed, and at the same time live a pure life, right? And that's better than being totally relaxed and feel totally natural and be sinful, right? Obviously, you know, the essence is not whether we feel good. The essence is whether Krishna feels good about what we're doing. The pleasure of Krishna is the standard, not our own pleasure. So in that person's case, he's measuring his own well-being. He's not measuring what's pleasing to Krishna. So we should look at what's pleasing to Krishna. Of course, it's most pleasing to Krishna if we are not sinful and if we're happy at the same time. But if we are not sinful and frustrated, that's better than being sinful and happy.
Well, another argument they use is that I see so many devotees leave and I am sort of still here, although I'm not, maybe not super following.
Nobody can leave. You can never leave Krishna. You may leave Krishna, but Krishna doesn't leave you. Om Agyanati Marandasya, the eyes are opened with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge. Even if you go away from the association of devotees, you still know that Krishna exists. You still know he's the Supreme Lord. Yeah. Even if you say, there is no Krishna, Krishna does not exist, right? You know, there was one devotee. He wrote a book, you know. He went to university, and then he wrote this book and it gave this whole lengthy explanation of how foolish it was to think that God was a blue boy. And the whole book was about the blue boy, you know. And it's like, he says, but God, you know, you're so Krishna conscious, you're always thinking of Krishna, right? The whole book was just about Krishna. And then why don't you just write about football or something, you know, something mundane. It's like after so many years, he's, you know, so many years trying to forget, he still has to write this book, this whole book about how God cannot be a blue boy. It's like, it's not so easy to forget Krishna.
You spoke about going back to Godhead. So do you think that without initiation, if somebody at the end of his life thinks of Krishna, he goes back to Godhead?
It says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila chapter 15, text 108, that there is no need to be initiated, but through chanting of Hare Krishna, one can attain all perfection. However, the initiation is a further support in that chanting and can lift us up, because initiation really means that one surrenders to the superior guidance of a spiritual master who knows better than we do how to be Krishna conscious, who has much more experience and realization. So therefore, he thinks for us instead of that we think for ourselves. And he says, no, don't do like that, do like this. And immediately, by following his instructions, we're lifting above the level where we are to a much higher level. So we can very quickly advance and then chant Hare Krishna in a much more advanced way and take advantage of it better. Therefore, initiation is very helpful and recommended and should not be, but it's not a formality. It means accepting the spiritual master in the heart. If it's just a formality, I want a name, I want a guru, you know, something to flash around, then there's no need for it.
Srina. People from other religions go back to Godhead, right?
We're talking outside the Vedic context?
Yeah, we're talking Muslims.
Outside the Vedic context. Generally not. No. Generally not. Because generally it is... But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did discuss that there, with the Chandkazi, that there is the pravriti and nivriti mark in the scriptures, or the path of gradual improving one's material condition and the path of ending material existence. Right? So, but ultimately, first of all, if one cannot recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where will he go? Right? So most of the Mohammedans and the Jews, right, they're impersonalists, right, to begin with. Right? So already that's one time out. Right? One time out. Then the second problem is that the process they're following is mixed, is compromised with impurities, meat eating and other such things. Right? Two times out. Right? So in that way, it will be very difficult. And therefore we can expect rather that the most pious amongst them will attain destinations that are higher within the universe. Right? I mean, there's so many planets, the Tapa, the Jhana, the Mahaloka, which are beyond heavenly planets for transcendentalists like that. So it's to be expected that they would attain, that the serious ones would attain higher planets within the universe. But to actually go outside the universe would be very, very rare. But if one at all would actually manage to attain liberation, right, then it would be at best in the impersonal Brahman, which is anyway temporary. Right? So it looks like that if we analyze it. I know it sounds a bit, you know, a bit sectarian. Yeah. It's not meant to be in a... It's not meant that we enter into a sectarian consciousness, although we may have this philosophy that Krishna consciousness is the best. Right? It doesn't mean that we have to therefore put others down and not appreciate them for their practices, their purity, and that when we meet like a very nice Muslim, that we cannot appreciate him. I'm remembering that when I went overland from Kathmandu to Amsterdam with the bus, and we stopped in Quetta, and there was one old man, a devout Muslim, and he had such a nice expression on his face. I could see this is a man of God, right? He's a very religious person. I really appreciated seeing that man. So there's no doubt, right, that he was a devotee in his heart and that he will be accepted as such. But generally speaking, not to the point of going back to the spiritual world. But we must appreciate, you see. We should not condemn and not place ourselves on a platform. Someone here in this temple once said that, like, he said that your religion, right, is certainly the absolute truth. And therefore, you're not a cult or a sect or anything like that, right? You're actually in the absolute truth. He said, but you sure behave like a cult, you know, you sure behave. Very sectarian, very much like a cult. So I think that's where the problem is. We should not behave like a cult. Well, that may take some time, you know, be before we snap out of the cultish behavior. I think it's getting better compared to the past. Yeah, if you look at
what is a cult?
What is a cult? You're saying?
It means that there is some artificial behavior. It means that there is some behavior where we are, we're playing a role, you know, of we belong to a certain club, we belong to a certain doctrine, and from that doctrine we're getting some sort of prestige and a status, and then we begin to identify with that. That's us. That's our identity. But we're actually not honestly presenting ourselves as the ones we are from truly where we are at in terms of our qualities. And if we act according to that status, then we are cultish and sectarian in our behavior. I think. What do you think?
When I think about cult, I think of people who don't think for themselves, who just repeat someone else without realization, without having an own, realization.
Okay. But isn't that similar to what I say? Because I say they act like for a status, for a certain, you know, whatever in the group is considered to be good. So, you know, as long as you have the right dress, say the right words, you know, have the right code of behavior, and like that, it's external. Well, you know, it's close.
But each word you can have different ways of translations, and in this way it fits.
Yeah.
A government with this kind of cult is something that's not actually a real religion. It's not got a history. It's just some new thing that someone's made up.
Academics would give us like further definitions, right? And academics would say that a cult is like is having its own preconceived ideas, and is no longer representing the true religious spirit, right? But rather it imposes like external forms and doctrines and dogmas, etc. Whereas really what we're looking for is the true religious spirit, right? From the heart, the genuine thing within, you know, kind of thing. Anyway, that's what we're supposed to represent, no? The true religious spirit. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta also writes an article about organized religion, and he says, like, as soon as there is a church or the institution, he said, it's doom, it's the end of the true religious spirit. Here we are, international society for, you know, it's interesting. So that's why maybe that person said that we are acting like a cult, because you get people who identify with the organization and like a role in the organization, position in the organization, so many stripes and stars and this and that, and, you know, and are advanced, right, just because of that. Yeah. Instead of like going for the true religious spirit. Going on for a long time.
But I see also there is a similar answer that to me it's a little bit confusing, because Prabhupada sometimes also speak about this as a cult, or about the time I was moving.
The word cult has also another meaning, right? It also just means like a particular package of religious teachings, right? So sometimes it's used like that without any further negative connotation. Sometimes Prabhupada uses like that. Anyway, Parvita's not satisfied.
That's why I was saying, though sometimes Prabhupada also used it. So it's just the word, it depends what people think.
Right. The word. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, just like the word to discriminate, I was having an argument with someone. Because I said, for me, the word discrimination, it has a negative
connotation.
And he said, no, it just makes the onderscheid maken, just to, makes to this is white and this is black. Or, but for me, if you think of discrimination at all, he's, because he's black or because he's Moroccan, and then so for me it has a negative. Even the word itself doesn't have that. It just makes.
Sure.
But if you think, if you mention the word, you think, oh, some people are excluded because of they're not men or they're not women or they're this.
Sure. Yeah, you look in a dictionary and then they give like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 12, 14, 20 different meanings of a word. And it all has different connotations. And some are like, yeah, like the word discrimination. Some are just meaning to make distinction between different natured items. And another meaning is the meaning of to put one class of man down below another and things like that. That may be. Anyway, the point though that he brought out is like in relation to us being sectarian and not accepting other religions as on par with us, as being very nice, but being lower, and you cannot attain the same goal through these other religions, right? But I think, you know, that's okay that we think like that. And I think that the world should also not condemn us for thinking like that, because I think everybody thinks like that, right? Otherwise, why would you be doing what you're doing, you know? Why would I be a Roman Catholic if I don't think it's the best? Right? Why would I be a Muslim if I'm not convinced this is the way to go? You know, why would I be an African tribal witch doctor unless I think this is, you know, the goal in life?
See, in Israel, Palestine, people are killing each other over differences, some of which
yeah.
Differences.
Yeah. Yeah, but that is because people are judging each other by the externals and are not going for the true religious spirit. We should, and therefore they cannot appreciate the good in the other tradition. Right? Whereas if you see the true religious spirit, as I say, you can recognize the devotion in the eyes of the Muslim. So the devout Muslim who is serious about his practices can be accepted. And you can see that in that spirit Prabhupada was ready, you know, to like, Prabhupada once said that some Muslim challenged him, he said, why are you trying to convert Muslims to Hindus? Prabhupada said, we're not trying to do that. We're trying to make Muslims better Muslims, Christians better Christians, Hindus better Hindus, right? By teaching them the real purpose of their religion, right? So, in other words, Prabhupada always said, love of God, right? Devotion, you know, to the Supreme Lord. That's the criterion. Not like whether you are this or that designation. So, same thing in our movement. It's the devotion that counts. Maybe we're lacking that. But I don't think we're so narrow-minded anymore as we used to be. In that sense, you know. Nor, like here in the street, you know, we have a good relationship with the church, right? And the priest is very open, right? And we go there sometimes. Avaduta even lived there for a while, right? He lived there with the priest for a while, you know. And they had a good time for a while. Yeah. Here in Amsterdam, you know, we're not so uptight about these things. Right. I think ISKCON is changing also. I think we're getting much more human and much more liberal. What is that?
He was asking or mentioning about the Muslims and Christians and where will they go? If they eat meat, and we talk about moksha. I was reading the other time, and then I was talking about Vishnu and Garuda, and snakes. He was eating snakes, and he's an intimate associate with the Lord. So meat eating doesn't exclude a closer relationship with the Lord. He might have got a different body, but if the knowledge which they give, they talk about the kingdom of God. So Krishna in Vrindavan is excluded because he's not sitting on a throne there. So it might be the utmost as the king in work of the door as Ram as the king. Mm-hmm. So if the knowledge which the guru gives is limited, so the disciple will go to that destination. So he will never go to Krishna Loka, definitely out of the question, because he didn't even aspire for it, he didn't know about that. So we heard, and even despite we hear about Krishna consciousness, that's why this movie is called Krishna consciousness. And not even all of us really want to go to specifically to Vrindavan. We might be more attracted to Ram Lila or to Krishna Dwarka or Varaha or Madhusinide. But so if the knowledge is limited which the guru gives according to time and circumstances, then definitely the destination of the disciple will be also limited. But they will go back, or definitely higher than here. But what for them is duration might be having plans.
Yeah. Good. Nice. Yeah, we leave it open like that. I think that's the best, you know. Since we're not able to look beyond the material world from our present condition. We're only able to look through what we heard from Prabhupada, what we read from scripture, but we cannot see beyond the limits of the material world. We don't have that kind of transcendental vision. We can look straight into the spiritual world. Therefore, we cannot understand from practical insight. You know, we can only, we read this, we read that, we hear this, we hear that, and so we go on these kind of issues. Yeah, it stays a little bit in twilight zone, right? Because we're here in the material world for now, and we cannot, our knowledge only comes in one sense theoretical through what we've heard, not what we can perceive. We cannot see who goes back to Godhead. If somebody dies, he's out of sight. Yeah, we don't know where he's gone. Yeah, that's our present condition.
You also mentioned before about growing old and growing wiser, which is not everyone. But what is the most important is desire. Right, the desire, like you say, we don't change because we have our attachment to this anger, lust, grief, whatever. But deep inside, you know, we have this angel and this devil on top of us. If we aspire to be good, although we are all the time shouting or screaming or doing this, but if we from the inside really want to be pure, and that will help to become.
Yeah.
By going to classes and by studying, you become wiser. But those people don't know they, or even if they won't, intellectual
things, they won't become wiser. So you have to do something about it. So yeah.
Through our conditioning, we are
in
a certain way, but
you
can still
update yourself a little. Makes me think of one thing, you know. It makes me think that because we've received knowledge from transcendental source, we know better. You know? And that knowing better, right? Even if you don't follow it, it sits inside and it ferments, you know, it works there on its own, right? Over the time. It just kind of, you know, just like a dissolving agent, you know, it sits there and works inside us. And it has its effect over the years, right? And even if you, still don't give up, right? Gradually with the years, you know, it begins to bring you to the point where you feel like, well, maybe I should, you know, maybe I should start doing something about it. You know, like it works like that, kind of.
And also, why do we come to class? We come to class to
pick up something.
Knowledge, something. Hey, so to uplift yourself. That's why we go to class. At least I go to class. Although it was a very entertaining class as well. In that field, it was also very fun as well. But mainly I come to be uplifted. And if you don't come, you don't get uplifted either. You do it by reading, maybe, but that's why the classes are here. Every time you can become uplifted a little more by hearing, and then it sticks more in your mind. Oh yes, that's what I heard in class yesterday. I want to thank you for that.
No, I want to finish. I really want to finish. I wanted to finish half an hour ago. I'm finished. You know, I'm tired. I'm sitting here thinking, when will this finish? You know, that's what I've been thinking. So that's thank you very. No, your comments are very nice, and Srivas's points also very nice. I appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah, but the two of you, right? Okay, I'm interacting a little bit with the two of you. But you've been around for a long time, and thinking a lot about Krishna consciousness somehow or other, not always exactly walking the totally trodden, prescribed path, sometimes going a little bit an individual turn, whatever it may be. But, it's been there all along, right? Fermenting, it's been part of life. Bubbling in the consciousness, so it's interesting to see the thoughts that come out, and like that, I think Krishna consciousness works. I'm going to stop and go on tomorrow. Thanks a lot, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.